Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Jenny has traffic.
All right, I'm all nervous, but here's my rap. All right, you're gonna have a good drive today. There ain't no problems on the major roadways. Looking at country clubs, things will look pretty good like Robin Hood. Now I'm moving across the triad, yo. It ain't too bad, no. Now things look nice on 68, and I know you ain't gonna be late. So that was your traffic wrap today. Austin Cavanaugh, come on, give us a weather, boy. Give it to us, word.
There you go. Oh, boy, Jenny, it's Weather Guy, by the way. That is
praise the Lord. Jesus, in the name of the Lord. Amen. I'm going to sing Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound. Amazing Grace. I want people to sing with me, too. Amazing Grace. How sweet the
7 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of June, in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the flawlessly functioning and plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. We are looming high above the milk packing district in beautiful southeast Portland. My name is Rick Emerson. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, an excursion into whimsy and technical proficiency. Thank you for joining us today. If you'd like to be part of our program via the telephone, it is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. That's how you can be part of the show. You can also email if you like it, rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Or if you'd like to text us, if that's your pleasure, you can do that online as well. You go to the Meebo chat box, which is right at rickemerson.com. You go to rickemerson.com, click on the Rick Emerson Show, and there's a little chat box that is... You don't have to install anything. You don't have to, like, I don't. You don't even have to register, right? You just you go there, you type, and it just works.
Yeah.
Just like this program itself and the audio feed of this broadcast, it just works. There's no hiccups. There's no flaws. There's no glitches. No mistakes. No runs. No drips. No errors.
It's like magic.
It simply functions without incident or complaint. It is 503-505-6964, or again, you can email Rick Emerson, Rick at rickemerson.com, or go to rickemerson.com, and you can chat live. Don Taylor manning the chat box today. Coming up later on in the program, we're going to have a taser watch for you, kick watch on the way, corpse watch. If we have time, we may or may not get to this mystery top five, and we have another installment of Pop Culture Authority today, focusing on flowers in the attic. And yes, I did this one. So despite the fact that I am not, in fact, a 15-year-old girl most of the time, the Pop Culture Authority today is from myself, your humble narrator. I've also got we have news coming up. We have the sound from, so I don't know if you've seen this. Did you see this fundraising thing they did? It was like a benefit for the New Orleans folks that lost all the livelihood because of the BP spill. So they did this fundraiser. I mean, they got a gaggle of celebrities together, and they all went out and they sang songs, and they said, but what about the crabs? And then, then people put money into a bucket. And, of course, and I think CNN was there sort of broadcasting, or they were sort of doing the organizing for it. So who, of course, is the youngest, spryest member of the CNN broadcasting team?
I have no...
That's right, Larry King.
Larry King.
So Larry King was there, and we've got some... it really is just Larry King... I used to think that he was going to live forever. I now know, after seeing this sort of behind-the-scenes, this raw video of him, that that's not, in fact, the case. But I'm hoping he will. Because as long as Larry King is alive, he continues to just give us the fantastic audio. So we'll get to that. We have the second half of the Bigfoot story, which started last hour on the Legion of News. We'll get to that. We'll have more of your phone calls and so forth. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Mr. David Walker from BadassMofo.com will be here. David Walker. And don't forget, coming up Friday, Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon of Fun Employment Radio, and of course, part of the Rick Emerson Show Extended Family, will be joining us as well. That is on Friday. David Walker tomorrow. Today, we have Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
I have an update on a story from our earlier Legion of News broadcast. Autopsy results have showed that the bassist for the heavy metal band Slipknot died of an accidental overdose of morphine and fentanyl, a synthetic morphine substitute. We were discussing what the difference was between morphine and fentanyl, and I've been informed that fentanyl is actually 100 times more potent than normal morphine.
If you had something 100 times more potent than normal morphine, why would you need normal morphine, is my question. I don't understand. Look, maybe it's because I'm not a
junkie.
Maybe
it's an emergency backup.
This is the breaking case of lack of fentanyl. Is fentanyl... Wait a minute. Hold on a second. I think I understand. Okay. Is fentanyl the thing that you take in a patch? It's like they put... You're supposed to wear it as a patch, but people will break... They'll cut the patch open... Occasionally, and that, like all junkies do, they're always trying to amp up the dosage or whatever, and so they try to they'll take it, or they'll like boil it in water or something to extract the fentanyl from it. Is that the thing here?
It's hard. I'm looking at it on Wikipedia, and it's used in cancer therapy. And there it is, a transdermal patch.
And
yes.
Okay, because here's this is the thing about fentanyl. When I was in school, as a younger man, when I was like maybe 8th grade, 9th grade, they would give us the whole don't do drugs, kids, thing. They would give us the lecture about, the drug, your body is a temple of Jesus, and don't violate it with narcotics, and no matter how awesome they may seem. And they did seem awesome. I remember reading in textbooks where they would describe the effect of a certain drug, and it always just seemed fantastic. Someday when I'm retired, I'm old, I'm infirm, I've lost an eye and both legs or something, I'm just going to do nothing but sit at home and just take drugs around the clock. I'm not going to give an F. Doesn't matter.
So that explains why you asked me at the Christmas party after I'd had a few beers in me if I'd ever done mescaline.
Yes. Yeah, because it sounds awesome.
You point a video camera at me and go, Don, have you ever done mescaline?
And what was your response to that?
No, I had done other hallucinogens.
Peyote.
Back then.
Or is that the same thing as mescaline?
I think mescaline and peyote are pretty
They're
much
similar.
The same thing, or similar, yes.
Right.
I did, back in the day, this was quite a long time ago, but yeah, I did LSD a couple of times, and I took mushrooms a couple of times, and I didn't like any of it very much.
Did you take those things a couple of times because you were you wanted to see if you were... I know someone, and usually when people say that, it's themselves, and it's really not, because I'm just utterly dull in that way, but I have an actual friend who took mushrooms several times, and they never really had any effect, but she kept taking them because she thought she was like doing it wrong somehow. And it seems like that's kind of a two-step process. Take mushroom, see God. And she thought that she was somehow, she had to try harder or something for it to work.
Well, yeah, you take acid or you take mushrooms, and everybody tells you it's like how fabulous. Everyone seems to be having such a great time. And then when I did it, I was miserable. I just really didn't enjoy myself at all and was physically and emotionally and psychologically uncomfortable. I just really hated it. And so it was sort of like, well, that, people say, that happens sometimes. You might have a bad trip. So it's like, a couple of years go by and the opportunity arises again. It's like, well, maybe that one time was an aberration and this time will be fun. And then I do it and it's like, no, this isn't fun. And not only was it not fun, but it's something you can't sober up from. So you're just stuck with it until it makes its way through your system. You're just hallucinating and miserable until it's over.
Well, you can sober up, but it takes a long time, right?
Yeah, but I mean, supposedly if you eat a whole bunch of vitamin C or something, it'll help. But no, it's not like drinking a bunch of coffee to, like, you know, get the booze out of your system or whatever. It's, you know, you've chemically altered your brain, and you're pretty much stuck with it until it wears off.
I don't understand.
And I don't like being that out of control.
See, and that's my thing. That's why I don't. This is why I'm not a drug abusing person, because I am such a control freak. I mean, the only drugs that really have any appeal to me are the ones that would put me even more in control. So, I mean, I could see just sitting at home, you know, just doing a massive mound of cocaine or something. But, of course, then the upshot is, the problem with that is then it's like this weird paradox where if you're doing a huge pile of cocaine, then eventually you're no longer in control, and I would say almost immediately you're no longer in control. The big pile of cocaine is in control, and it's saying, you know, mug or whatever.
Well, that's the drug education we received when we were kids is we would be told all the horrible things these drugs would do and that they were terrible and scary and bad for you. And we would see these movies in which people would be tripping and hit by cars or burn their hands on stoves. And then the first time you actually try a drug, you're like, this is awesome, and nothing bad happened to me. They must be lying.
They must all be great.
And if they just told you that, you know, yes, people become addicted to drugs because it feels awesome, and then... But then you have to keep taking it to keep feeling awesome, and then you have to keep taking it just so you don't feel crappy.
And then you're sitting at home in your own stool, just sort of staring out a window, doing nothing.
So we actually explained to people why you don't do the drugs.
Right.
Like, yeah, the first few times you do it, it is awesome. But after a while, you're like rolling over in bed and doing a line just so you can get up and go make coffee.
Sam Kinison, the late, great Sam Kinison, who was sort of the definitive word on many of these things, he talked about how he would be, he'd be drinking all night, and then eventually got to the point where he would actually have done, he would have consumed so much alcohol, and he would have taken so many, like, downers, like sleeping pills or, you know, the Valium or something. He would take so many sedatives, he'd say that before he would go on stage, he would actually have to do, he would rack out all these lines of coke, he would have to do several lines of cocaine, and then inhale oxygen directly from a metal tank just to burn through the Valium fog.
Nice.
And at that point, it just becomes... Steven Tyler described drugs as... he said they were like a chemical loan shark. And he said that they'll give you, you know, energy or inspiration or whatever. And he's like, but then they come back and they take it all away, plus like 30%. It's like you end up in the hole, like 30% of whatever it was you were lacking before. The thing about that fentanyl, I don't want to say who I think it was. It was the other... prominent Portland music person who was on the show, and I believe that she described using a fentanyl patch, maybe, because it had been described this way. Fentanyl had been described, and it's another one of those descriptions that makes you want to take it. It was described as, quote, the most powerful narcotic on the planet. And that is a thing that will get me to go to the fentanyl store and be like, hey, free, please.
No.
All right.
Well, I've always felt like I had a conversation with a friend of mine once that, you know, we had smoked some marijuana as teenagers and various things. But he told me that he really wanted to try heroin just once. And my thought on was that considering, you know, how addictive certain substances are that are not heroin, that it must be, like, scary good. just way too good.
Right.
It's actually frightening, the idea of how good that must be if it's that addictive.
Well, they're like, you know, I'm just a complete dick until I get my morning caffeine. And really, that's a thing you can just get at Safeway for like $3. So I won't say the only person I know who did or has done heroin, but the only person I know who had a story like that, and then we have to move off. Otherwise, yeah. It's just going to become nothing but drug talk. People, I've heard a lot about this Rick Emerson show. I wonder what it's all about, and then they're going to tune in.
Oh, they talk about drugs all the time.
Well, and for the first half an hour today, they're just going to hear a lot of good news, everyone. But the only guy I know that had an experience like this, he went to a party. It's always at parties where these things are happening. And a guy had some heroin, whatever, and they all end up in a back room, like, you know, huddled around a candle, you know, listening to Miles Davis, probably. And the guy, he took some heroin, anyway, but his brother asked him later. We're all talking about the brother goes, well, what was it like? And the guy goes, he said, it was terrifying. And I said, well, what do you mean it was terrifying? And he said, it was the best thing I have ever even imagined. He said, it was better than the best thing I've ever even imagined. It was better than the best thing God has ever imagined. And that was when he decided he could, like, never do it again. It was just like an off switch in his head. Coming up later on today, we're going to have another installment of Pop Culture Authority, this one about Flowers in the Attic, the iconic teen novel from author V.C. Andrews. We also have a Taser Watch coming up, Hick Watch, Corpse Watch, possibly a mystery top five, and your phone calls. You can reach us anytime at 503. It's actually not true. You can reach us between when the show goes on live and when it goes off live. The rest of the time, I think it's just like a... I think it's a voicemail thing that says call back later. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Once again at the news desk, Dawn Taylor.
Well, how about we do that corpse watch?
How about we do that corpse watch? Wait, hold on a second. What with all the hustle and bustle today as we were getting ready to broadcast and then finding out that there were a little bit of we had a few technical issues to work through. I created all these watches, and then I stuck them in this folder where they would then be cleverly hidden from me and not usable in any way. All right, let me find my corpse watch and so forth. Oh, for the love of God. It was...
I could talk about something. Why don't you do something else you do that?
It's that thing where, like, it was just here. I was working on it this morning. All right, we'll do the corpse watch here in just a second. This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
An Australian student named Michael Treblecock... is suing Treblecock.
Okay.
Is suing Sony for $800. He's 25-year-old. He's on a disability pension, and he says his PlayStation 3 no longer works as advertised following a software upgrade. The software change on the console has affected consumers throughout the world, and despite class action suits worth millions of dollars in the U.S., Mr. Treblecock's claim is thought to be the first one in Australia.
Mr. Treblecock sounds like some sort of pornographic children's TV host. Hey, kids, I'm Mr. Treblecock.
Apparently our skips and our pops are returning.
Well, that's fine.
Mr. Treblecock's complaint is with the Install Other Operating Systems feature included in the PlayStation 3 he bought in March 2007. The feature allowed PlayStation users to replace the standard PS3 operating system with a different one, such as Linux, and allows them to use the device as a personal computer as well as a video games console. However, an optional upgrade introduced by Sony on April 1st deleted that feature, rendering useless any other programs already downloaded into the console.
That's handy of them.
Mr. Treblecock has lodged a claim at Holden Hill Magistrates Court in Australia, where he's seeking $800 from Sony, a figure he said was reached by calculating how much it would cost to rent a laptop for each day the component has been removed, plus $116 in fees.
Here's the great thing about this story, is that before you even said he was British, I knew it just because his name was Mr. Treblecock. which sounds, it's like impossibly Dickensian, and it's the sort of name that only appears in stories that are like from like the Sun or the Mirror or the BBC or something. Also, the PlayStation has done that. They did that really clever end run around, they and Netflix did this really clever end run around Microsoft recently, which is the sort of thing that you sort of have to salute, because, you know, you're able to stream Netflix movies directly to your Xbox, but there was an exclusivity deal there, and the way that they got around it, the way the PlayStation got around it is, apparently there was some legalese in the contract that said that, like, you know, the Microsoft Netflix streaming software, you know, the Xbox is the only gaming system that can contain the Netflix streaming software. And so the way the PlayStation got around is that now they just gave you a DVD that you put in, and that's in fact what enables you to do it, which means it's not actually installed on the system. No. And then they're also screwing you up this way. So.
And the story has made Thomas Gill angry. He wrote in to say it was not optional; it was a mandatory software update, F Sony for removing the optional Linux install. But Mr. Treblecock said that one of the reasons I bought the PS3 was for this feature. It allowed you to use the PS3 as a computer, not just a games console. You could attach printers to it and print documents. You could use Messenger and Firefox web browsing. But Sony decided that particular part of the system, which they had marketed as one of the reasons for buying it, was posing a security risk, and they removed it.
Well, that's like how somebody in the studio, and her name is Dawn Taylor, has this laptop that is running Windows Vista for reasons sort of passing understanding.
Came with Vista installed on it.
I was going to ask if you actually went out of your way to install, which, and I know that Windows Vista is not as bad as everyone says it is in some ways.
And it has run beautifully on my laptop. I understand that it actually works quite well on laptops, and I have never had any real problem with
Until we actually tried to make your laptop record sound from the Intertron. There was a little piece of YouTube video or something we were trying to tape. And Microsoft has, in fact, on Windows Vista, they have disabled the function where you can just record whatever sound is happening on the computer.
The sound mixer device does not exist in Vista.
And they claim that that's because of some sort of action because of, you know, from the RIAA, or it's a Digital Millennium Copyright Act thing, which is odd because I have a computer that came out around the same time, and it does that flawlessly. Once again, at the news desk, here's Dawn Taylor, and I'm ready for those watches.
Oh, good, because I have many corpse stories, so let's do a corpse watch.
Here's your corpse watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love.
All right. Here is your corpse watch. You got to fix your hair right now. You just took your headphones off, and then you put them back on, and it was like you had full-on troll doll hair there for a second. Here's your corpse watch for Tuesday.
The state board that licenses funeral homes in Ohio has opened an investigation into a funeral director in Findlay, Ohio, who is accused of mishandling a corpse, being naked in public, and wearing the jacket of a deceased man in front of his family.
Please tell me all three things happened simultaneously.
He couldn't have been naked and wearing the jacket at the same time.
But he could have been naked in public with a corpse.
Well, Gregory Routson, owner of Routson Funeral Chapel, was not, in the first story, there is an update later, he was not facing any criminal charges. His funeral home has been closed pending an investigation. Okay, that was the update. According to a notice of suspension, state regulators said they began the investigation after receiving a complaint from a family last week. Other allegations against Routson include being intoxicated or addicted to illegal drugs, not properly disposing of waste materials, and failing to properly sterilize instruments used in embalming. He's also accused of being naked in public during business hours, threatening and/or harassing employees, and partially embalming a corpse and then leaving it unrefrigerated for 13 days. Routson did not return calls to his funeral home, but he told CNN that the accusations were not true.
Wait, let's back up a second. Where was this also in Britain?
No, this is in Ohio.
It's odd that he was charged with being naked in public during business hours.
Apparently,
like once 5:02 comes around, you can wander through downtown Akron, tackle out, and it's not even an issue. It's fine.
Yeah, after 6, he could dance around in his funeral parlor naked all he likes.
Also, why is it an issue if he's using unsterilized embalming tools?
Probably because it could create some sort of rot in the body. I mean, that's the whole thing.
Being
about
dead causes rot in the body. Yeah. Or maybe they're worried that you could get that, like maybe a technician could become ill.
Something.
Yeah, if you're cutting up a guy who died of scurvy or whatever, and then somebody else comes in, I've cut myself, and then your teeth fall out, and you're wearing a peg leg.
I want to know the story that led to him wearing a dead guy's jacket in front of his family. The dead guy's family.
I thought it was in front of his own family.
No. Apparently he...
He was wearing a dead man's jacket in front of the actual next of kin?
Yeah, wearing the jacket of a deceased man in front of his family. So, yeah, I believe he said, hey, nice jacket, and put it on and then went out and talked to the family at the funeral home.
I would like to think that there's some sort of innocuous explanation, like it was just cold in the lab, and he goes, well, I've got some, you know, I guess I'll throw on this old thing.
Well, I'm working naked. I better put this on.
I hadn't really put it together with the nakedness part either. Well, maybe he just wanted them to have, you know, maybe it was going to be a closed casket funeral. He wanted them to have some glimpse of Dad before he was interred. All right. Is that the...
I do have another corpse
story,
actually.
It's a triple corpse watch.
Well, it's a double... Oh, no, it is a triple corpse watch.
All right, here's your final third of that triple corpse watch.
Well, now, actually, no, this is the second third of the corpse watch.
It can't be a second third. Wait, how... Stop.
There's three stories. That was one.
No, no, no. Everyone should quit talking. Have you not done two corpse stories now?
No, that was just one. That was all just one guy.
God damn, this is a weird world. Okay, so we are now getting to the second of three corpse stories.
The second of three corpse stories.
All right, this is mind-boggling. Okay.
All right. Mandy Berthelot of...
Mandy Berthelot?
It could be Berthelot, but it, B-E-R-T-H-E-L-O-T.
So we have Jim Treblecock and Mandy Berthelot. I think these two should meet up together, and they could outdo that Duggar family.
Mandy Berthelot of Bogalusa, Mississippi.
That you're making...
She said that both are... By the way, I want to mention, Tim Riley could not have said that.
No, no, but, you know, the thing is, he would have said that, but it would have been in, like, the town would have been, like, Des Moines.
Yeah.
All right. Just let's stop for a second. Mandy
okay.
Berthelot.
Uh-huh.
From...
Bogalusa, Mississippi.
Bogalusa, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Said that both her mother and her husband, Eric Cooper's mother, were found dead in their homes on the same day last week. His mother died of natural causes. Hers had been shot, wrapped in a blanket, and stuffed in a freezer. The man she lived with for 17 years, Robert Wayne Sylvia, 56, was arrested and charged with her murder. The Berthelot was a former resident of Yunnan, the one who was killed. The couple lived in Mississippi for about 4 years. Mandy said she was supposed to come over the Sunday before for a crawfish boil, but she didn't come. On Wednesday, I asked a neighbor if he'd seen her. He said they'd just been having problems. My stepdad never let me talk to her, she said. He said she was asleep or she was at work. Then on Thursday, my husband's mother was found dead at her house. Mandy called her mother's neighbor from her husband's mother's house.
I feel like I'm reading a party line conversation here.
I told him to tell Bob that Mandy called because Eric's mom died.
Are you reading this off a scratch pad that's taped to the side of a refrigerator? Bob, Mandy called. Apparently Ted's mom died, and the crawfish boil at Treblecock's house is going to be moved till next week. Signed, Mandy Berthelot. Mandy Berthelot sounds like a doll from the South that no one would want to buy.
But anyway, her mother-in-law died, and in the process of dealing with the dead mother-in-law, she discovered that her own mother had been shot and stuffed in a freezer.
The end.
The end.
There's your triple corpse watch.
That was only two.
Oh, God damn it, really?
That was only two corpse watches.
Each of these stories feels like a metric ton of corpse news. Let's just delay the last one
okay,
until tomorrow.
Okay, we'll save the other
one. What are the third of that? All right, thank you. We're closing that out.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone. Digging up bones.
Jesus, God. I feel like I'm years closer to death after that story. All right. We'll do the final third of this apparently innumerably filled corpse watch tomorrow. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us today. If you'd like to chat, you can do that live at rickemerson.com. You go to rickemerson.com, click on Rick Emerson Show and a little chat box there, and you will be able to interface with Dawn via the text. You can call if you like. Our phone lines are open. It's 503-505-6964. One of the many things that I meant to do last night. You know, what would the whole the beginning of today's program being boggled up? One of the things that we did not actually even do was this sort of, hey, what did you do last night, Dawn Taylor? I don't know, Rick Emerson, what did you do? Well, I did this. Well, I did this. Aren't we relatable? We never really had a chance to do that because right out of the gate, we were having some stream-related issues, which turns out that the stream is now actually back up and working. And again, if you're listening to this on the podcast, it doesn't really matter. But last night, just before we go any further, I should say that it's a good problem to have. I'm happy to have these issues to deal with. But in conjunction with our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa, I was up fairly late last night kind of responding to listener queries and, you know, getting the archive issue taken care of because the archive page, which is now up and more or less fully functional, by which I mean that if you have subscribed, you've gotten your password, the odds are like 99.999% that it's going to work. We found that some of the absurdly long passwords, like if you're, in other words, if your username is more than like 30 characters, then it sometimes will kick it back to you. So if your username is more than, because we had one guy where it was like John Aloysius Dinglehoofer something at rickemersonradio.com.net/org/whatever. And it just went on and on. And so it was truncating that. But that issue aside, the archives are back up and they're fully functional. And, you know, the show will be posted there every day. Legion of News will be posted there. But getting to that point last night was just this. It was like I was rolling a digital rock up a digital hill just over and over and over again because, and as I noted earlier, it makes me sound like a tool if I say this. It's like I'm waiting for everybody to say, but you're so beloved. But it caught me really off guard, I think a lot of us off guard, that there was just so much crush of demand for people wanting to hear the podcast. So I was up kind of late dealing with that. And it is, you know, kind of handling all this other stuff. One of the things I meant to do was to post at rickemerson.com our phone number. And I didn't get a chance to do that. I also didn't get a chance to put a little note next to the podcast or next to the archives that says, you know, like, click to listen or right-click to download.
Oh.
Because one of the things you do realize is that Steve Jobs is really the very he is the digital version of the giving his users a fish. Because people who use the iPod, I just checking my inbox this morning. This is a raft of iPod users, and I'm not criticizing. I'm just making an observation. The thing about if you were using an MP3 player, or doing anything like that before the era of the iPod, you kind of had to figure out how to fix it yourself or how to access files because it was always impossibly difficult. The iPod is actually so easy to use, I think, that it has sort of screwed people up because if it doesn't automatically appear on your player, sometimes people aren't entirely clear how to do it. So I'm going to put up a little thing tonight explaining how you do that and that you click on the archive to listen, you right-click on the archive to download, and then once it's downloaded, you can just, you know, import it into your iTunes.
And on the Mac, you option-click.
Is that what it is? Oh, it's, yeah, the option-click, unless you've got the new aluminum unibody MacBook, in which case you can finally right-click.
Mm.
For the love of God, like 40 years after the rest of society was able to do it. So I didn't get a chance to put that up, and I didn't get a chance to post the phone number, but that is 503-505-6964. Coming up later on in the program, Flowers in the Attic will be the focus of our pop culture authority. We have a Taser Watch, a Hick Watch coming up, and perhaps a top five.
So was that was it for what you did last night? Was that
I would try to come up with something more exciting, but last night was just, it's that whole thing where you get really, really amped up because you are so tired and so exhausted that your body your body just makes it's. Occasionally, you'll meet people who have they've started to lose their hearing. Johnny Ramone was like this, where his hearing started to go out, and so as a result, his brain compensated by just cranking up the volume in one of his ears. And I met somebody else recently who one of their ears did that. I forget exactly who. I think it might have been our friend Todd Tulsis. I think it might have been his wife Cindy. I may be wrong about that. But where she started to lose the hearing in one ear, but this strange thing happened. Her brain just rewired itself. And suddenly everything is really loud. And when you get really tired, I think your body just decides, like, okay, you will never sleep ever again. And it switches on the adrenaline. But then the instant that switch goes off, it's like you are dead to the world. And there is no waking back up. So from last, I don't know, Monday maybe, I mean at least a week, I think we were really just on a death march to get this whole thing put together and get the show done. Gone off the air. Dawn and I went to lunch, recapped the show, talked about what worked, what didn't, talked about how to make the beginning of Tuesday's program flawless in a technical sense,
yes,
and how to execute it with a minimum of glitches or hiccups or errors in any way. And then I went home and I started addressing the issue of the archives and the passwords, stayed up late emailing people their information so they could log in. And then I went to bed. And I have to tell you, I was so exhausted this morning. When my wife left, because she woke up and she was going off this morning at like 9:30, and I said, you know, look, make sure I'm out of bed at 9:30. Like, if you leave the house at 9:30 and I am not up, make sure that I'm awake and sort of cognizant.
And I do want to mention at this point that one of your last words to me last night was, make sure we're here in the office by 10 o'clock at the latest.
Yeah, no, I was like, don't be late, Dawn. If you're tardy, I will think less of you forever. We've got to be at work and prepping for the show by 10. So Dawn gets here, she calls me at 10:15 this morning. She's like, hey, so I'm waiting to get in because I don't have a key yet because we have a minute and we have one too few keys. We have, you know, six
and
people.
And I drew the short stick somehow.
Six people, five keys. And I look and it's like 10:15 and I'm actually still at home, like not wearing any pants. Because I was so exhausted that when Laura left the house, she said, you know, like, hey, you know, don't forget, you've got to be awake and up right now so you can go to work and prepare for your show with Dawn. And all I heard was like, and then the arms of Morpheus embraced me once again, and I just drifted away. So I got I got nothing done after about 3 a.m. last night. It was like my brain just switched off. So all that information will be put on the website within the next 24 hours, so it'll all be posted there.
Well, ask me what I did last
night. Hey, Dawn, what did you do last night?
Well, my husband suggested that perhaps we should go to dinner to celebrate my inaugural show here at the Legion of News, Rick Emerson Show, Emerson News. So we went to a classy little Continental Bistro. You may have heard of it. Called Old Country Buffet.
Yes.
Where we had
Was it inside a mall?
No, this is the one in Tigard, I believe. And but we had a 2-for-1 coupon. So it
wow.
Because we're classy.
God, you put on spats to do that as well?
Well, the whole Old Country Buffet thing for me is it's not really so much about the food, which is only just adequate. It's not terrible food.
Well, it's just, it's pressed starch in many forms.
Well, no, it's actually, it's like going to dinner at somebody else's mom's house.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the food is okay, but it doesn't taste quite like what you're used to. But the thing is, it's like, to me, it's partly about beating the system. Because, first of all, here's the thing. If you go to buffets.com, which is the website for the company that owns Old Country Buffet and four other outlets.
And have no doubt I'm doing that right now.
And you can sign up for their e-club, where you put in your name and your email address and your birthday. And they will immediately shoot you a coupon via email.
I like the idea that they would just immediately shoot you.
Yeah. They send you a coupon for one free dinner when you buy a dinner. Now, the thing is, if you have Google Mail, you have basically unlimited email addresses at your disposal. You have 50 invites. So you send yourself an invite, create a new email address, go over there. It takes 5 minutes, and you've saved $10.
You're gaming the buffet system.
I'm gaming the buffet. Then you get there, and you realize, okay, how can I make the most of this?
Oh, wow. I'm looking at this. I'm at this page right now. And the opening, like when you go to, it's actually oldcountrybuffet.com. You go there, and it's, okay, my mouth is actually watering. It's disgusting and embarrassing, but I mean, what are you going to do? The first thing is just pieces of bacon on the screen. Yeah. It's like a lingering photograph in high resolution of bacon, which then dissolves into some fried chicken, which is now dissolved into, that looks like fish and chips, which is now dissolved into a steak. All right, I have to close this.
Yeah. See, and then you get there, and also, one guy says, John from Gresham makes a very good point in the text box. Yes, he says, if you get there about 15 minutes before they switch from lunch to dinner as well, you can save a dollar because they bring the dinner food out and you're still there from lunch. So, okay. But the thing is, you get the free dinner, go there. It's like $10 for both of us to eat dinner. Then you stay away from the salad bar because that's for chumps. And you just go straight for the protein sources because they always have like three different kinds of chicken and they have a guy carving roast beef.
And is he the guy? And is he wearing like the starchy white outfit with like these? It's like he's got a Quaker Oats box on his head.
No, Old Country Buffet isn't that classy. He's just wearing a polo shirt that says Old Country Buffet on it.
Well, you know the thing about it is, and people can sort of turn up their, you know, including myself, will turn up their noses at buffets because God love my family, but they're just rubes. I mean, they're just such hicks. And my wife's family is the same way. Where you know her dad just turned 75, and so he went to Chuck-A-Rama. And Chuck-A-Rama, which is the best-named restaurant ever, Chuck-A-Rama is a buffet-style restaurant in Utah. Whereas when I was growing up, it wasn't so much that this is like a soda or pop kind of a thing, you know, or like a Coke or RC Cola. In Utah, it's Chuck-A-Rama. In my hometown of Kennewick, it's it's not even a smorgasbord. I swear to you, the name of the restaurant is just the Smorgie. S-M-O-R.
Oh, I love that. The Smorgie.
G-Y. There is also, there's the Smorgie, which is sort of definitive. I think that attempts to be a sort of category-owning chain. And then there's a branded one that's got a guy's name, and that's Roy's Western Smorgie. And I think the only thing that differentiates the Smorgie from Roy's Western Smorgie, this sounds like I'm speaking gibberish retarded baby talk, I know. But Roy's Western Smorgie has a bunch of paintings of proud Indians inside.
You know, Indians love smorgasbord.
And cowboys. There's nothing that Indians love more than to see caravans of white people coming across the horizon. Maybe they'll be friends with us. And a guy ringing the dinner bell as pilgrims were loading their muskets and getting out smallpox-laden blankets and flasks. So we would go to the Smorgy, and the thing is, it's so easy to turn up your nose at those places. But if you go to Vegas, every buffet is just a Smorgy.
Oh, yeah.
That's all it is, man. It's just a Smorgy.
And there is some excellent food at some of those Vegas buffets.
Oh, no, we're going to do this right now. Okay, you are going to list for me now. You're going to list the preeminent dessert and non-dessert item. Don't subcategorize into breakfast, dinner, whatever. There is your dessert, and then there is your not-dessert. You must list your favorite dessert item, which is available on a buffet, and then your favorite non-dessert food item available on a buffet.
Well, my favorite dessert item would probably be cheesecake. Because even crappy Jell-O, mass-produced cheesecake is still cheesecakey enough that on a buffet it can be good. And I have to say, with like Old Country Buffet, for example, I always try to get there for pot roast night.
See, that's the thing that I just don't. That to me is too home feeling.
Yeah, but it's really hard to screw up pot roast because it's slow cooked for a really long time until it's tender. So it's like, because the problem with the meat products at the buffets is at sometimes they can be a little overcooked, a little bit overly dry. But
I'm saying for me, this is my own opinion. I got to bring back the Instapoll music at some point.
Old Country Buffet, though, by the way, they do have the big hunk o' roast beef that the guy slices off, and then they have the horseradishy sauce that you could get on the side, and that is quite delicious.
And he's always there with the big long knife, and then the fork with the tines, the long ass fork, and he just says, would you like it thick or thin today, sir? Would Monsieur like some cobbler to go with this? Perhaps a soft serve ice cream bar. I got to bring back our Instapoll music because this is exactly the sort of thing that we could conduct an Instapoll about, which would probably be more practical in the text box. I'll find that at some point.
I will share also, as far as desserts go, my husband has a ritual that he will go get one of the chilled salad plates at Old Country Buffet, and then he makes himself what I call the pudding plate, where he takes the chilled salad plate, goes over to where the pudding is, and puts like two kinds of pudding and some Jell-O all on a plate, and then takes it back.
God, it's just like a night at the Waldorf with you guys.
We're fancy.
It's like I'm at... If I close my eyes, I swear to God, it's like I'm at the Algonquin Round Table.
It's like dining with Scott and Zelda.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say dining with Scott Daly, which would also be true. It is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. In just a moment, I have found the Instapoll music, which we probably won't use today, but I'm actually going to... I'm going to dig this up, and we'll use it tomorrow, and we'll do an Instapoll off the text box. I have not yet answered my buffet question, so I'll do that. Then we're going to have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. On the other side of Pop Culture Authority, we will plunge on into the rest of the program, including some fantastic Bigfoot sound that Don rustled up this morning. We also got a Taser Watch coming up. We may or may not get to this top five. And coming up tomorrow on the program, David Walker will be with us. So David Walker tomorrow on the way, Bigfoot, Taser Watch, and perhaps the top five, Pop Culture Authority in just 1 second. I have to answer the buffet question. I'm saying for me, I'm not much of an ice cream guy. When you're a kid, you like the extrudable ice cream. At first, because... How do I put this? Because it... Well, because it kind of...
It looks like poo.
Yes, I was going to say it looks like poo. How did you know that?
Yeah.
Oh, am I so transparent? You see through me, madam. It looks like poo. And when you're a kid, you're like, look at this. Into like a little silver chalice.
Plus, you're getting to operate machinery.
You're getting to operate machinery. And plus, the other thing when you're a kid is, even if it's the idea, which I guess never really goes away if you're an American, that it's something free. Even if it's a thing you don't really want or you don't want that much of it. It's like when you go to the theater and the guy, would you like a tankard of soda? It's only a nickel more. The idea that the ice cream... presumably, we'll just keep coming forever. It's like, as long as you get the lever pulled down, it's just going to... into a bowl, like, forever and ever and ever, amen. And that's a glorious thing. The other thing about the buffet and the ice cream, although this is still not my first choice, is the idea that there's just... This is why I love America. I love America because of sprinkles. Because sprinkles, or jimmies, depending on where you're from. And that there's just... They don't really have much of a taste. They're just kind of a sugar thing. But that there's just a bin of them. It's like it. You know what the sprinkles are? The sprinkles and the Jimmies. I'm really warming to my subject now. The sprinkles and the Jimmies at the ice cream buffet. You know what that's like? It's like being given permission to just eat out of the bulk food bins at the supermarket.
Because
when you do that, like if you're ever at the store, and I don't, by the way, somebody else does, my wife, if you're at the store, she'll like, my wife, who I love you, but it's just such a hick sometimes. I mean, I love you, honey, but she'll eat food before she's paid for it. I'm like, you can't do that. You just can't be eating crap out of the box that you haven't paid for.
And you were mocking the pudding plate.
I'm just saying. But you can't eat out of the bulk food bins, but the Jimmies or the sprinkles at the ice cream, it's like that. I'm saying for me, though, the preeminent dessert is the cherry pie, because I love me some cherry pie, and you can just get one wedge of it after another, after another, after another. In terms of your non-dessert items on the buffet, it really is, it all comes down to fish sticks for me. If there are, I mean, if you can get like a fish stick or like a breaded fish, or like a cod fillet, like a bad fish and chip style product, basically with
I had some of those last night at Old Country Buffet. They're the little triangular wedges of the battered fried cod.
That's the thing. It's not even a stick of fish so much as it is like a, you know, it's like a wedge of fish. But it's that kind of fish stick type food where there's no actual fish flavor of any kind. It really is just the taste of grease and breading.
It's all texture, really.
It's fantastic. Just eat that till the cows come home. All right. On the horizon, we come back. We got some Bigfoot sound for you. Now, if you were listening to Legion of News, as you should have been, you probably heard the first half of this. We'll get to the second half. Taser watch on the way. Also a Hick Watch. Is the Hick Watch part of the Bigfoot Watch? Are they all
the
sort of...
Hick Watch is the Bigfoot.
Is the Bigfoot sound.
The Bigfoot story.
Conglomerated together. And we may or may not get to this mystery top five. We're running just the slightest bit behind today. We had a little glitching out of the gate. Don't forget, you can find out more about this program and Legion of News anytime at rickemerson.com. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We return momentarily. Is Flowers in the Attic based on a true story?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Rick Emerson. We lived in the attic. Christopher, Corey, Carrie, and me. Now, there are only three. So writes the character of Kathy Dollinganger in B.C. Andrews' neo-Gothic masterwork, Flowers in the Attic. The story of four very unlucky children imprisoned by their grandmother for nearly 4 years. Flowers in the Attic gained instant notoriety and infamy upon its publication in 1979. Among the reasons, an awkward and, one imagines, rather unsatisfying sexual relationship between the two oldest siblings. Flowers in the Attic spawned four direct sequels, a truly dreadful film adaptation, and after Andrew's death in 1986, an endless series of books churned out by author Andrew Niederman, who as of 2010 had written 64 novels as B.C. Andrews. So, is Flowers in the Attic a true story? According to B.C. Andrews herself, the answer is yes. In a letter sent to a publisher in 1978, the author described her submitted manuscript as, quote, the fictionalized version of a true story, end quote. A relative of Andrews, meanwhile, stated in 2009 that, quote, Virginia was a young lady when she developed a crush on her doctor. He claimed that he and his siblings had been locked away in the attic for over 6 years to preserve the family wealth. That area of the country has a lot of very wealthy people, though. I do not know who they were.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network. And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I believe it is now time for our Hick Watch.
Fantastic. Here is your Hick Watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. No, fail. Here's your... And wait, no. Oh, I tried to play like... You know what it was just there? That was just like in Last Crusade, where Sean Connery says, that's for blasphemy. You know, that was hubris just now, because I was all boasty about how everything was working perfectly and there were going to be no issues of any kind at all. So now I have to go back and I have to play it manually, because I thought that I would fly in the face of God. All right, here's your Hick Watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Hey,
with your Hick Watchers, Don Taylor.
In the early morning hours of June 5th, Tim Peeler of Cleveland County, North Carolina, told authorities that he saw a 10-foot creature with a long beard and yellowish blonde hair wandering about his property. As he described it to the police... Where is it? Why isn't it working?
As he described it to... Oh, I'm sorry, that's me. That was my fault over here. I'm sorry. All right.
As he described it to the police...
This thing was 10 foot tall. He had beautiful hair.
It was like gossamer wings on which my soul would float.
Peeler lives on Veneta Drive, northwest of the town of Caesar. There's little notes of
Caesar.
It's C-A-S-A-R. Kazar.
I think that's Caesar.
There's little or no civilization between his property and South Mountain State Park, one of North Carolina's least developed North Carolina's least developed recreational sites. He told deputies he heard screeching and grunting sounds, came outside his cabin, saw the creature near his home. Peeler, who calls himself a mountain man, told authorities he thought the creature might be menacing his dogs.
I'll come out here and rough talk him and run him off. And I said, get away from here. Get. And he went right back out that path again.
I lost him there. It was all pops.
I'll come out here.
There we go.
And rough talked him and run him off. And I said, get away from here. Get. And he went right back out that path again.
He went right back up that path again.
Yeah.
I find it difficult to believe. Well, I guess this isn't a path with, like, flagstones or something, right? This is probably more of a crudely imprinted trail on the ground. So he thought that there were coyotes menacing his dogs?
Yes, he thought there were coyotes. He actually went out, don't really have the sound for this, but he had a coyote collar, which looked like a...
Like around your neck? Oh, like a...
You can Google the news story and see the original news story. And no, a coyote collar.
Oh, like a whistle.
Yeah.
Like a duck call. Like...
Yeah, except that it looks like a coffee can tied to a pipe. And he was kind of making this noise. He called it a coyote collar, but I think the whole point was to chase them away.
No, that's it. No, because then it wouldn't be called a collar.
It'd be called something else. I'm saying I think he misnamed his device.
You're thinking his grasp of linguistics may be ever so slightly tenuous.
That's possible.
All right, so he went out there with it. It would be awesome if he actually had a thing that was designed to keep coyotes away, but that he'd somehow reversed, like he'd engineered it backward. Because then in my mind,
why do they keep coming?
There's like it immediately jump cuts to some sort of a cutaway scene where he's just being besieged by coyotes. So he went out thinking there were coyotes menacing his dogs, but in mm-hmm. fact it was a 10-foot tall what? It was a 10-foot tall creature with pretty hair.
This thing was 10 foot tall. He had beautiful hair.
How would you even deduce whether or not the creature's hair was beautiful? I mean, unless you're just simply making a judgment on the tone and the color of the hair. It doesn't seem like it. It's not like you were Bugs Bunny in the castle where you're sitting there combing gossamer out while saying, monsters are the most interesting people. It seems like he's making a lot of judgment calls right there without sufficient data. Also, this is where? This is in South Carolina?
This is North Carolina.
I'm sorry, North Carolina?
Yes.
I thought that Bigfoot was almost solely an Idaho and Washington based creature, because I think it's Yakult, I think, which is where the National Bigfoot headquarters actually is, and I believe that it is in, not Saskatchewan, what's a place in Washington that sounds like Saskatchewan? It's Saskatoon? No. Sarsaparilla? No, I'm turning into Bugs Bunny.
I don't know.
It is Snoqualmie, I believe.
The Siskiyous.
I believe in Snoqualmie, it is actually a felony to kill or harm Bigfoot in any way.
Well, apparently there have been about 30 years ago, yeah, 78 and 79, there were sightings of a Bigfoot in this area back then. A number of people in the area near Carpenter's Knob, north of Kings Mountain, reported seeing a large creature with long back hair. walking on two legs, which authorities said was probably a large black bear. But people insisted that no, it was a Bigfoot. One property owner reported one of his goats died of a broken neck. And newspaper stories from the time report of Bigfoot hunts
now,
by some of the local residents.
Let me ask you this. Somebody has emailed me here and they said, and we were just talking about this earlier, they said he's not talking about Bigfoot, he's talking about Sasquatch. Which indicates to me that there's some sort of a difference, but I don't think I'm privy to whatever the distinction is between the two creatures.
Well, I always think of a Bigfoot as being a North American thing. Isn't Sasquatch the Himalayan?
I'm not even going to tell you. Do you know?
Is the Abominable Snowman?
That is from Rankin Bass. That is just a thing you read about in pop-up books that come from the little golden company.
Oh.
No. The thing in the Himalayas is called the
Yeti.
There you go. And I don't know if that's like a Sherpa word or something. I don't know where the hell that comes from. But I don't know if a Sasquatch and a Bigfoot are exactly the same thing or not. Somebody will know.
They're cousins.
But is it just like different names? Or are they distinct creatures? I realize I'm talking about goddamn things that don't exist, and I'm asking for distinctions in the linguistic field. I'm asking for etymology in terms of cryptozoology, which is like triply insane. But somebody will know the answer. They always do. All right.
Well, the sheriff's office says that it patrols the area near this fellow's property quite regularly. And
I would imagine they would have to.
The Sergeant Mark Self of the sheriff's office told the local news, "If we see something, we'll try to capture it and take it into custody."
Was that followed by a rim shot and then an off-mic comment where he went, Larry's crazy.
Hold on. I'm going to play this one more time.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen.
This thing was 10 foot tall. He had beautiful hair.
Fantastic. There's your Hick Watch, ladies and gentlemen.
I know
Tuesday.
Copenhagen the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. Copenhagen makes me feel so
indeed.
Wikipedia says they're the same thing.
They're not the same thing. Why would they have two different names? Never mind. You know, I'm going to put a pin in that right now. That's going to be a thing that I'm not going to get.
In Florida and most of the South, a listener says, it's referred to as a skunk ape.
Okay. Let's all just begin naming Bigfoot ourselves, shall we? Let's just have a... This is like one of those classroom films where they say, in Finland it's Hergen Flergen. In Canada it's A. In America it's Hello.
In Kansas they called it the Lumpy Bear Man.
Okay. Wait, are you making that up or is that real?
No, I just made that up.
Nah, I don't even know. We have some of this other audio to get to, so I will rustle this up here in just one second. Let's see, Tom, not Thomas, our chief engineer, but different Tom says, you never explained why Don had all the pills on the counter this morning. Is there something to worry about? I would say the answer is there is always something to worry about. But I came in today. This is one of those things that work, and you just whack your head into the microphone. I'd say load up on whatever it is that's been prescribed to you because your sense of vertigo is kicking in again. This is one of those things that we're going to have to sort of take it day by day. We'll have to play this by ear as our relationship develops on the air, Don, and figure out exactly where the line is and when I've crossed it. But I will only say this because, well, A, it's funny, but also because when I came in, the drug that you were referring to is actually something that I myself have a prescription for. That's the reason why I know that it's okay to reveal this particular. If it was like some drug that then, like, you ever hear somebody talking about a drug, or like you see it, and you look through medicine cabinets, because everybody does, where you see them, you see a drug, and you don't recognize the name. But then you immediately make a note to run home and Google it to see what it is.
Yeah.
What do they have? Do they have rickets? the tapeworms, perhaps? And you're always hoping it's something ghoulish. So I came in today, and I was running a little late, as you might have noticed. And as I walk in, Dawn is on the phone, and you've got that particular... This is the sort of conversation, by the way, that would typically happen at the beginning of the show if we had not been horked by some technical glitches, like right out of the gate. But I walk in, and Dawn's on the phone, and you've got that particular that tone of voice that really only manifests itself when someone is on the phone with a pharmacy because their prescription is dangerously close to being gone. I saw an episode of House. One of the many things I did while I was unemployed is I watched the first 5 seasons of House in like a week and a half. I was done with it after basically like the first week. I two seasons in, I was just like, I've seen every episode of this, and it's just going to be variations on a theme. But then, you know, you're unemployed, so why not? So I just continued watching.
I'm now starting to understand what actually transpired in your mind that caused you to offer this job to me.
Yes.
You were all saturated with House.
Exactly.
And you thought Dawn.
Kane, Pills, Dawn Taylor. So House made this great observation on one episode where he was talking about deducing that a guy was not, in fact, a junkie. They thought he had a drug problem. And the realization that the guy didn't have a drug problem was the fact that the guy went to take a pill, and the bottle was empty. And he goes, oh, I guess I'm out. And House said later, he goes, okay, that guy's not a junkie. He said, junkies always know exactly how many pills are left. A junkie is never caught off guard by a bottle being empty. He knows he's got 3 days left or four pills left or whatever they have, one dose. You know, he knows what's remaining. I came here today, and Dawn is on the phone. She's going, okay, now, if I could get this, could you confirm this today? Because my prescription is really, it's close to being gone. If you could get this, can I pick this up? What is the fastest you could possibly, if I bribed you, would you have a horse-drawn carriage bring me these pills immediately? Would you send a personal courier? And then I'm standing there with the door open, and I'm thinking, it's all so awkward. I've come in at the worst possible time. But it's like if I duck outside, then it's a whole, she knows I've heard her discussing her pills. Maybe I'll come in and pretend that I'm not, which is equally implausible, the idea that I would come in and pretend not to be listening, because of course I'm listening. You're on the phone talking to a pharmacist. Okay, I'm going to be listening with rapt attention. And it turned out that you were getting your prescription for Trazodone.
Yes.
Refilled. And Trazodone is a muscle relaxant slash sleeping aid slash, I believe, an antidepressant if you take enough of it. Although
I think it's an anti-anxiety drug is what they do it for as well.
If that stuff makes you not anxious, it's only because you've taken so much of it that your body is no longer functioning.
Well, what it does is I believe it actually bumps up your serotonin, and that's why it helps you to sleep, why it helps you to relax. It actually increases, you know, your serotonin. So.
All I know about Trazodone is that the guy warned me. He said, when you take this, he said, be in bed when you take it. Don't take it and then go to bed. He's like, take it while you're in bed. And he said, the next morning, you know, because they tell you on the front, like last 6 to 8 hours. And apparently it varies from, you know, your mileage may vary. But the doctor actually said to me in so many words, he said, don't F with this stuff. The Trazodone, don't play. Like, you respect the 8-hour window the first couple of times. But me, and I'm fine, I'm a hardy young man. So I take the Trazodone. I woke up the next morning, swung my feet off the edge of the bed, walked out the bedroom door, walked into the kitchen, and then immediately collapsed on my face in the kitchen. And I don't think I knocked myself out, but I sort of then went into a daze again because I had just woken up. But my legs just buckled from underneath me, and I woke up laying flat on the kitchen floor because my muscles could not actually support my own weight. So that is what you were refilling when I came in today. But the best part is looking at the countertop in front of you.
Yeah, I had three empty pill bottles sitting on the counter, like on the table just in front of me.
It was like you had dumped out a physician's desk reference onto the countertop in front of you. And I thought to myself, this is going to be the best show ever. Because how could it not be? You're clearly just gacked to the gills on any number of drugs right now. So that's where the genius lies.
I loathe going to the doctor. I'm not one of those people that goes to the doctor very often. I actually come from a family of medical professionals. My mother was a nurse. My father was a paramedic. And I grew up with this attitude that you only go to the doctor if, like, it's something you absolutely know you cannot cure yourself.
Bleeding out of the eyes.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I see my doctor, like, once a year. I get the checkup. We say, how's everything going? How about the, you know, she re-ups my prescriptions that I take on a regular basis. And so it's been like 18 months. And I refilled something at the pharmacy a few weeks ago. And they said, oh, by the way, your doctor's office said they're not going to give you any more medication until you go see her. And I was like, oh, okay, I got to make an appointment to see my doctor. But we've been so busy doing all of this and getting this again. And I've just been going, I don't know when I can go. I don't know. And I never called.
And the best part is this is exactly when you need medication.
Right.
Is when you're launching the brand new and sporadically functional radio program.
So there was that thing where I was down to like the last three Trazodone. So I was just kind of going, I'll save them for when I really, really super need them.
And that day is every day.
Yeah. And then last night I had like one left and I was like, I am sleeping tonight no matter what because I've been sleeping horribly. So I took the last Trazodone. So then this morning I'm going, okay, I need to make an appointment with my doctor, and I figure if I call today and I make the appointment, then I can say, I made the appointment, Could you refill my damn prescription, please?
It's a show of good faith.
I promise I'll come in. So that's what that was about. And then,
did they do that?
Yeah, they said, well, yeah, as long as they see on the books that you've made the appointment, it should be fine.
Are you effing with me? They don't ever.
No.
Okay, I'm gibbering myself into a frenzy. Sorry.
My doctor is actually a nurse practitioner, and she's very trusting, though. She's very trusting. If I could... I don't want to... I don't know how much of this I should talk about.
The answer is all of it, but we got to stop for a second. What is... And the thing is, I'm married to a nurse, so I don't know these things. What is a nurse practitioner?
A nurse practitioner, it's sort of like... I think it's the doctor equivalent of being like a paralegal.
That doesn't help me at all.
They can do a lot of the same things that a doctor can do. They can do more things than...
Is it like a super nurse?
It's like being more than an RN, for example, but less than a doctor.
More than an RN, less than a man.
They can prescribe medications, for example, right. Which I guess RNs can.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know how that works.
But we, it's like I have, I don't know how much of this we've discussed on the air ever, but I have arthritis, and I've had both of my hips replaced, so they're awesome.
You're a cyborg.
But I still have a really crappy knee.
Is that why the cane?
Yeah, because I have a really misshapen, nasty knee that needs to be completely replaced. And sometimes it hurts quite badly. And I was horribly crippled up with the hips before I ever had the hips done. And so I started taking pain meds for the hips.
What kind of pain meds, Don Taylor?
Vicodin.
Awesome.
And so I had this ongoing prescription for Vicodin. And I was, it wasn't a lot.
Well,
but
those are the best four words that anybody could ever utter.
Well, now what has happened is the last time I saw my doctor, we were talking. They had this whole new process where I had to fill out this some kind of an agreement saying I promise not to sell my drugs to other people. I promise not to call you at home and ask you to give me more. I promise not to abuse anything. It's a contract,
right?
So I had to do that. But then at the same time, she said, well. You get X number of refills before...
You have to come in again.
You have to come in again. So why don't I just set it up so your refills for these are for 100? So now every time I refill my Vicodin, it's for 100.
Wow.
So that's...
Now, are you only enjoying from selling those? I mean, what if
See,
it was just more
problem.
Of a gift?
My husband and I have actually talked... I've said there have been a couple of times when we've needed money. I'm going, damn, I wish we knew high school kids.
To pay the rent with these.
High
school kids don't have any money.
Yeah, but they'll give you like $10 a piece for a Vicodin, and they're idiots. But my husband pointed out, for example, and then there's the whole going to jail issue, too, which is kind of scary.
I suppose.
So I do nothing. I do nothing illegal with my medication.
No, of course not.
And I really don't take that much. It's just that I always have a whole lot of it because I fill the prescription like every few months, and I get this giant bottle of them.
Okay, can I just say this? In all seriousness, see now. Speaking of House, because the whole thing on House is that he's a Vicodin addict, which is kind of the whole Sherlock Holmes thing. But I should actually say that glorious is Vicodin, and Vicodin are really just they're awesome, they're fantastic, but not for the reasons that I think a typical user of it. I was going to say recreational, but I'm not even a recreational. Let me put it this way. There are people who get hooked on Vicodin because they like the way it feels, and they become addicts because they like the high of it. Brett Favre was that way. And Brett Favre, he told the most horrifying drug story where he talked about he was so hooked on the ritual and just the love, and it's that whole thing of like, oh, sweet, lovely Vicodin, let me caress your rounded ends. And he was so hooked on them that he would take like 5 Vicodin, throw them up, scrub them off just so he could take them again.
Oh, God.
And that's kind of when you go like, Jesus, God Almighty, I don't want to ever go. Like where you go, okay, well, I guess I'm not really addicted. When I was taking Vicodin, which were prescribed to me, by the way, I should point that out, the thing about Vicodin, it wasn't that I loved the high so much, because I don't really enjoy being foggy, or having my brain slowed down, unless it's just going to be like right before I go to bed or something. Like if I'm going to bed or if I'm having, I used to have panic attacks a lot. And so for panic attacks, this was like Rick and Don's medicine cabinet. For panic attacks,
back talking about drugs again, you notice?
Well, that's because before there was, Sarah would always interrupt and go like, stop talking about drugs. But here's the thing. Let's not lie. There's vast swaths of the audience who are loving this. And they're actually licking the speakers right now. But they prescribed me Ativan, which is like it's like a Xanax or Valium. It's like an anti-anxiety thing. And I've had a bottle of Ativan sitting there. I got 25 of 30 left, I think, because I just don't take it because I don't get panic attacks anymore. But it's the whole thing of like, I'm glad that it's there.
Yeah.
If it wasn't there, it might actually freak me out a little bit, because panic attacks, if you've ever had an actual real panic attack, it is the worst thing ever. It feels like you are about to die. But
I would read you what it says on the text box, but I don't think I should. It's just... Okay, I will read.
Is this from someone we know, or
a listener? He's been on the text box. If you, I won't say who he is, but he does say all in caps, "OMG, Ativan rules, Rick! I will blow you for two of them." So that's
okay.
That's exciting.
He's
way too excited about this conversation, by the way. Whoever that listener is.
This? Do you know who this listener is?
I could tell you what his nickname is, but
I don't want to. But,
I don't think so.
You don't know who it is.
I don't think
life.
I know him personally.
And that's for two of them?
Yeah, that's what he said.
I wonder what I could get
two
for like five.
I know.
All right. Maybe he has a sister. Anyway, what if like it was a sister and he just watched for like half of one? No,
well,
I guess that would be more.
That's
I'm bargaining in reverse, though.
No,
I'm doing it wrong.
That's no deal. Yeah.
And that really, okay. Anyway, the thing about Ativan is that, you know, if you have a panic attack, it's just, it's a terrible, terrible feeling. And so I like to know that those are around, but I don't really take them. The thing about Vicodin is that I don't really enjoy the high. I don't enjoy being foggy or cloudy or anything like that. But I do, you know, every now and again, in my whole life, and I know we sound like sickly people here, but my whole life, ever since I was a kid, I get these terrible, terrible pains in my legs when I was a kid that they always told me were growing pains, which I realize now was just because they didn't know what the hell it was. And so it's not like it's incapacitating, and I'm certainly not. It's not like I'm on a cane or something. So I realize that all things being equal, it's not that bad. But I will get these horrible pains in my legs that will keep me awake all night. And when I had Vicodin, the great thing about Vicodin, you don't need to take an aspirin or Tylenol or Advil. You take it, then after a while, it starts to kick in, and then the pain kind of lessens. It mitigates the pain. Yeah. Vicodin is like an off switch. It just reaches. You know what it is? It's like taking the fuse out of something. It goes. And it takes it. So it's not even that the pain is gone. It's just that, like, you're not even capable of registering it. It just doesn't even exist.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing with your opiates, too. It's the pain is there, and there is actually a part of you that is still kind of sometimes aware that the pain is still there. You just don't care.
It's like you can look at the pain through a window, but you can't touch it.
Yeah.
It's,
But the thing, I don't understand how people actually get addicted to Vicodin, because, and maybe part of this is me, but my tolerance increases for it so quickly that if I take Vicodin like every day for say 3 days straight, it doesn't do much anymore. It's
right.
Like it's like taking an Advil. So I have to just stop for a while because it's not going to do me any good. So it's like, you know, if I was taking like two or three or four or five a day, it's like there's this point at which of course you're taking like 10 at a time, because otherwise they're not doing anything. It's like how do you afford to be addicted to Vicodin? That would be insanely expensive.
I think the guy who offered to service me orally is the answer to your question there. I think that's can I just...
Of course, I don't understand how people can afford to be alcoholics anymore either with the price of booze. I go to a restaurant and order a drink, and I'm like, $6? You know, so I don't...
You know how much buffet I could get for this?
I could eat a whole country buffet for like...
I think the answer, by the way, I was talking to somebody about this once. I said, that, you know, the thing about, you know, the thing about junkiedom, we were talking about the Venn diagram, the overlap between being a whore and being like a crack user. And when does crack user and whore become you're a crack whore? And I think that the answer is, always. It just
takes
longer for
some people.
Well, when
you do one for the other,
people.
I believe there's the...
Right, but my thing is that, like, that is an inevitability for everyone. It's just a question of how long it takes you to get there. I mean, if you smoke crack long enough or, you know, or popping down Vicodin by the fistful, you will end up, you will end up dirty-kneed in a back alley weeping silently to yourself, but cradling
that.
A handful of pills. I mean, that's just the way. That's another reason why, you know, when somebody says, do you want to do some heroin, Rick? No, you know, because I don't want to end up servicing a hobo next to a trash can.
I also want to clarify really quickly that the reason that I had, like, pill bottles sitting out on the counter was that I was then therefore going to call Walgreens and fill prescriptions, because I have found that it's easier. They are more responsive if you use the thing where you punch the numbers into the phone than if you use the thing online, which apparently they only check every 3 days.
Well, if you use the thing online, then they'll mail it to you.
No, you can pick it up. But the thing I found that I've done the refill thing online and then called them later and they're like, oh, we never saw that. So, but for some reason, the phone thing seems to work. So that's why I had the pills out, so I could look at the numbers.
And this is the last thing we have to say, then we have to move on. My dislike of the people, though, is just, you know, and of just human contact, and almost, really, through a microphone is the only, it's like a, I'm like the boy in the plastic bubble. It's like I can only be social when I'm hidden by this thick mesh screen of the Electrovoice RE20, the world's finest microphone. Outside of this, it just it's like my immune system, but it's my social immune system fails, and I wither and die almost immediately, like a rose in winter. But my dislike of people is just so strong that I can't even go to the pharmacy, so I just make them mail that stuff to me. Mm. Stick it in my mailbox. Which, so you ought to look into that. That's really the that's the way to go. All right.
Of course, my Walgreens also has a drive-through. So
a drive-through.
So I actually go through the drive-through.
So you can actually just be taking the cap of the Vicodin off with your teeth while you're. Thank you so much.
It has it has one of those little metal drawers like they used to have at banks.
Like at the vacuum tubes, it goes.
They have that too because they have two lanes, so you can use the vacuum tube or the metal drawer like at the bank.
I always can I just say this though. My final thing about this, really honestly, is that I always wonder why you don't hear more about drugs being stolen out of the mail. Because, you know, a lot of the stuff that they're mailing out is, I mean, that's like a controlled substance. You know,
yeah,
you
I wouldn't want them mailing that to me.
Oh, I have them mail it to me all the time. I'm just always amazed that the post office guy hasn't just decided to, you know, trazodone, fantastic, and just taking it. So, and to wrap all of this up, the best part is the guy who is back there offering to provide me with any number of macular favors for the Ativan. There's some Vicodin equivalent of him who, having heard you say, I have at home a giant bottle of Vicodin, is on Google Maps right now, triangulate something now that he knows you're here from like 10 till 2:30 every day.
I know, I thought about that. It's like, oh, great. Now somebody's going to mug me because they think I'm carrying around like massive amounts of Vicodin, which I'm not. So don't mug me.
All right. Don't mug me, bro. Speaking of which, do we have a taser watch?
We do. It's now 2:52.
All
right.
Let's continue with that. Yeah, we'll do this, and then we'll wrap it up for the day. Joining us tomorrow on the program, Mr. David Walker, film critic, writer, and the man behind BadassMofo.com, and one of our favorite people, David Walker, be joining us on tomorrow's show. Thursday, I believe, I was emailing with Christy Turnquist last night from the Oregonian. Thursday, I believe, Christy Turnquist. Friday, Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon will be joining us on the show. We'll talk about Fun Employment and their listener party, which is coming up on the 26th. Tomorrow, we will endeavor to get to the mystery top five. The only reason I'm not more concerned about that is because it's been sitting there since October the 23rd when they fired us last year. So I'm not that worried about getting to it right away. And I have all this Larry King sound that we'll probably have to get to tomorrow. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, it is Tuesday. Here is your Taser Watch for Tuesday, June 22nd on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. God damn, I've missed this program. Here's Don Taylor with your Taser Watch.
A 16-year-old boy was taken to a Portland hospital after he passed out while being tased during a SWAT raid at a Salem home. I was in the bathroom and I heard this huge explosion, said neighbor Calvin Thayer. It shook the floor and I could hear it rattle the windows of the house.
Where was this at? Was this here in Portland?
This was in Salem, Oregon.
There was a huge explosion?
I don't understand what that has to do with the taser, but that's what the neighbor said.
I was actually just going to make a joke about, depending on where he lived, and he's in Salem, so it would have been just that's just explosion with an apostrophe in front. All right, I need to pay more attention to actual local happenings.
Oregon State Police said the boy was refusing to comply with the Oregon State Troopers and a SWAT team during a search warrant execution around 6 a.m. Wednesday. Investigators said the boy was hit with a taser but continued to resist until he became unconscious. It's hard to say how many times they tased him, said neighbor Christina Davidson, but they're powerful, and I think 5 or 6 grown men could have taken that boy down without tasing him.
But really, if you have the option of taking him down without tasing him or with tasing him, I think we all vote for with. You could do a show of hands with the entire city right now. And the only person I think who would object is, in fact, the guy who got tased 5 or 6 times. And I mean, really, they issue the tasers, they train you with the tasers, they pay for the tasers. Why not use the tasers? And also, I don't know if he was all on the PCP or whatnot, but a cop tells you to do something, you do it for simple self-preservation, if nothing else. Even if you're not doing anything, even if you think the cop is in the wrong, simple Darwinism indicates that when the guy with the gun and hello the taser says, you know, hey, you there, stop moving. You do that, you know, you get a tasing and a night in the box.
It's like what they say about when you're attacked by a bear. Just hit the ground and play dead.
That's my thing. Or else you get what this guy obviously had coming to him.
Well, police were assisting officers with the DEA as part of an ongoing drug investigation. The boy was identified as Stephen Avila, who lives in Southeast Salem. Police and paramedics performed emergency procedures on the boy until he was taken by an ambulance to Salem Hospital in critical condition. He was set to be transferred to Dornbecker Children's Hospital in Portland.
Old?
16.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. The 16-year-old, I'm not saying they tased him to death, right? Because he's just in critical condition?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I would like to think that he's not going to be screwing with anybody anytime soon. I'll put that every day he's in critical condition after a repeated tasing, which seems like he probably was just begging for, that's a day that he's not menacing me with a sharpened screwdriver on a subway somewhere. So,
One man at the home was arrested for unspecified charges. I'm assuming it had something to do with drugs.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, that's what you get. Eat that, friend. There's your taser watch for Tuesday. Warms the cockles of the heart and the soul and the other thing. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow on the show, we'll talk to Mr. David Walker of badassmofo.com. Tomorrow, another installment of Pop Culture Authority as well. Tomorrow's Pop Culture Authority is, I believe, the Pop-Tart installment. We will discuss the issue of Pop-Tarts and the naming of singular and plural toaster pastries from Kellogg's. Also, the Mystery Top 5 coming up tomorrow. And at some point, and it's got to be this week, I think, we have to start sort of delving into the big pile of things that happened while we were off the air. So that's going to be tomorrow, Thursday, Christy Turnquist from The Oregonian. Friday, Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler will be our guests as well. In the meantime, in between time, don't forget, you can email us. It's rick@rickemerson.com or... I got to set that up today. Dawn@rickemerson.com. You'll be able to do that. You can text us tomorrow during the show. You go to rickemerson.com. And tomorrow between 1 and 2:30-ish, you can call at 503-505-6964. Archives of today's show and Legion of News will be up, I don't know, it is now 3 o'clock. I'm guessing probably in the next 90 minutes to 2 hours. So it might take a little bit longer. It could be a little bit of a snafu at the top of the broadcast. We've got to piece all that together. That'll be up later on today. So archives available at rickemerson.com. Until next time, my friends, my name is Rick Emerson. We thank you for listening. And that is The Frequency. Kenneth, I think I've completely failed to load up the... I've completely failed to load up the closing music today. So we will end as we began. We'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you for listening.
Jenny has traffic.
All right. I'm all nervous, but here's my rap. All right, you're gonna have a good drive today. There ain't no problems on the major roadways. Looking at country clubs, things will look pretty good like Robin Hood. Now I'm moving across the triad, yo, it ain't too bad, no. Now things look nice on 68, and I know you ain't gonna be late. So that was your traffic wrap today. Man, let's get some weather from my weather girl, Austin Kavanaugh. Come on, give us the weather. Boy, give it to us. Word.
Oh,
there you go.
Oh boy, dude, it's the other guy, by the way. That is something.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.